I'm Don Harris, and I started in a bicycle shed in Southside Radio and what was the Hotel Victor on Rochestown Avenue. I'm plus 60 now, so I was only a young fella in those days. And then I went into various radio stations. But my start in Southside Radio was quite interesting because there was a friend of mine was doing a programme there, and I always said to him, Peter, if you want to take a break, I'd love to sit in there sometime. So I did it, and I was hooked. It was all albums, all vinyl. Great times. And I went on from there to various stations, Island Radio, ARD, Big D, and South Coast Radio in Cork, Sunshine Radio, KLAS. And it was such a fantastic time. And then, along the way, I got this idea of setting up a central booking agency for local radio stations. So I did that in 1983, and that became Airtime Limited. So for a while, I was the central booking agency for local radio stations that were outside of Dublin. And that then finally became the first version of IRS, or Independent Radio Sales, and I was the first CEO of Independent Radio Sales in 1992. That's when it launched, June 1992, I remember it well. In fact, as we're sitting here or standing where we are, it was this very venue in this very hotel where IRS launched. I remember it well, and it was quite interesting from my point of view as well, because I like playing golf, and the few days after we launched IRS, the first week of it, I won the captain's prize. So that told a lot about the achievement I felt had happened at that stage, and I'm very grateful to all the people involved with the local radio stations. We were pirate radio stations prior to them becoming proper independent radio stations, but there was such a lot of support and interest in the survival and proper development of commercial radio to become what it did and what it is. Such a success. I feel so proud to have been part of that story, really. Somebody managed to unearth a picture of me interviewing a little known couple who became very well known, called Rene and Renato, who turned out to be complete frauds, but they could sing. They had a song called Save Your Love for Me. So we did that in South Coast Radio in, I think it was 1983. I even had a moustache in those days and a bit more hair as well. It was an absolute joy, and I'm still involved with radio nowadays, broadcasting on Dublin City FM, and I have my own operations called Coach Talk, and Talk Back is something I'm known for. But I suppose Airtime was where I probably would have cut my commercial stripes. And then we launched the Radio Advertising Awards in this very hotel as well, where we are now. So there are the achievements. Very proud of all those things. Thank you very much to all the organisers involved with this. It's a real pleasure to be here. Actually, to be here at all, never mind be at this event. Thank you very much.
So let's go back. So were you in sales? Is that how Airtime developed? And tell us about... Not a lot of people here will be able to talk about sales in radio. So tell us about sales.
I was in sales because Airtime was a sales house. There's some paperwork here, which would be the start of what was to look like a central booking agency for radio stations. And my little logo's here and so on. And this was all done on photocopiers and stuff. But the list of radio stations was quite extensive in those days. I think I'm just leafing through the book here in front of me. 16th of December 1983, I just found a stamp on this book. And there's quite a lot of radio stations involved. A little map here. So we had Carousel, Radio West, Kiss FM, not the Kiss FM, that became the Kiss FM part of Nova, BLB, which is Bray Local Broadcasting, ABC in Waterford, ERI in Cork, and Big L at the time. South Coast joined ERI, and then, of course, lots of other stations joined the picture. But that's what it was in terms of the number of radio stations on and in December 1983 when I produced this little document, and we got going with the idea of selling a group of radio stations as one body. And the first line of this document says, airtime has been established to cater specifically for the needs of media buyers in advertising agencies, and in particular those involved in buying airtime on local radio, and blah, blah. So that was it. That was the first draft, and really pleased to be involved with all that. I got the bug. I became an anorak next to no time. That's really what happened.
And tell us about selling local radio advertising when local radio was pirate radio. What was the difference between then and when it became
legal? RTE's opposition at that particular time, the lack of listenership figures, a total interest from the advertisers, national advertisers, to be on local radio and have an alternative, but no real information available. But the strangest thing, providing the deal was right, they didn't actually look for figures at all. It was just a seat of the pants. The radio stations in Limerick, we hear it's very strong, let's do some stuff. And it was that sort of level. It was a trust. It was an instinct that this is a new development for radio in Ireland and should be supported and should be grasped. And the local radio stations themselves, the pirates in those days, were great, doing a great job in giving a service to local advertisers who didn't have one either. So ordinary local hotels and places who prior to that just had national or rather independent regional newspapers, that was all they had. So a small radio station to come along and offer 25 spots or 21 spots or whatever it might have been for a manageable amount and to produce the commercial was terrific. But in those days, the litmus test was, if the campaign was working, was you put a telephone number in the ad. And the idea was, the more the phone rang, you knew your ad was working. So, of course, the canny people in sales said, OK, guys, well, make plenty of calls then, will you? And it worked. And there was a statistic going around on BBC at the time, where we all looked at BBC for lots of things, that for every one phone call that was made, there was about 1,000 listeners. And that was their kind of research. So people said, OK, well, 10 phone calls, you must have 10,000 listeners. So who knew? But it was a litmus test that worked extremely well to get the idea of stations off the ground. They thrived. Massive creativity. Famous broadcasters came out of the whole business of local radio stations all around the country. And there was a movement. There was a new movement that took place that eventually culminated in 1988, with the Broadcasting Act.
And so tell me about that transition from 88 into, for you, it turned into IRS. That must have been a difficult time.
It was a very difficult time. Airtime had to stop. All the radio stations had to stop. And there was a famous date in May. Even I'm struggling with this, but I'm pretty sure it was in and around 88 anyway. Everybody had to come off the air. Mm-hmm. Hoot the horns. We made a lot of noise and there was a protest going on. And that got the message through. So the government knew it was badly needed. They threw up all sorts of excuses why stations had to come off the air, interfering with emergency services and all that sort of thing. And in one or two cases, maybe they were. But in the vast majority, they weren't. It was just get these guys off the air. So, yeah, the stations had to close down, but the interest had been established and the government couldn't afford not to have that young vote. So they moved ahead. As it turned out, there were some dodgy dealings around that time and a couple of people actually fell foul of the law. In my case, I was commercially struggling, to say the least. I'd had my first child and second child. So actually, when it came up to Christmas 1991, I was really, really struggling trying to get over the bar with winning the contract for IRS with my colleagues. I had to sell my car to put money into the company. But we got through Christmas 1991. We got the contract back, having lost it the first time. I don't want to go into why it didn't happen the first time. It'd be not correct to say so now. But anyway, it fell apart from the first company that got it in 1991. They made a horlicks of it, to use that coined phrase. And we were back in again. And this time we got it. Deals had to be done. And the first part, for the first 5 years of IRS, it was IRS Airtime. And we were the sales agents for IRS. And that's how it was constructed. So independent radio sales were owned by the radio stations. Airtime was privately owned by myself and some colleagues. And we did the deal and moved on, and sold radio station, evolved the whole idea of a rate card for what probably initially was about 14 or 15 radio stations, and grew to 23, I think, at the end of the day, prior to our involvement with IRS finishing in the end of 97. So we were the buyers, or the sellers, I should say, buyers and sellers, depending on what way you look at it. It was interesting how the deal was done, because there needed to be a marketing budget. So what we constructed was a system whereby the agencies needed to get their, advertising agencies needed to get their commission, which was a sacrosanct 15%. The new entity needed to have money. So we devised that it would be basically 2 15%. The second 15% would pay the wages and go into the marketing fund of this new entity called IRS. But we did it off the net. So 15% off, say, 100 was 85. And then another 15% made it, if you took it off the bottom, an actual total of 27.5%, not 30%. And that was quite critical in the end. So that's how the thing operated. So there's 27.5% went out of every 100 euro from an ad agency to a radio station, only for national advertisers. And that was very, very important. So the local advertising could flourish, and the stations effectively got what they could based on what were now JNLR figures as the JNLR progressed. And it became a very solid and successful entity over the years. Some stations, and I do remember a very, very famous meeting down in a media conference in Cork, when a second body wanted to establish itself as a central sales house, owned by a certain Mr. O'Brien at the time and a few other people. And their idea was to set up a central rate card, but what a surprise. They only wanted the cities and none of the Midland or regional stations that were on the periphery. So I had to convene a meeting very quickly when we all saw this ad in the Irish Times the day of the media conference, I do remember well, and explained to the radio station that they wanted to go this route, any bit that wasn't in one of the large conurbations would struggle for revenue. So we won the day on that, and eventually won the contract in June, and the local radio stations like WLR, ABC unfortunately didn't make it through the licensing process, so WLR did, delighted, hugely successful station. But some people who worked on ABC then worked in Southeast Radio, which was a new station that came on. Clive Rowlands particularly comes to mind. And the other stations really all began to flourish, but with a bit of guidance. There were some cases where the idea of a national rate card and discounting needed to be done, and we did have to point out to people, what you do is you come in at full rate but offer the discount. Don't come in at half rate, because you'll never get up to the full rate. So that all evolved over a period. Huge support again from the large advertisers, and really a huge interest and an understanding that this was an opportunity to target an audience and segment an audience, test market campaigns and so on. And then interestingly, in the same period of 5 years when we were looking after those stations, Aircom, or Telecom Air, as they were, majorly came behind it with a thing called a community diary. And this was the most difficult contract to construct, because we had to do it on a number of times the radio station, fitting it in with their programming and working out a suitable rate. But in the end, that contract to those stations that were involved at the time was worth 110,000 per annum in varying degrees. So some stations might get 5,000, 4,000, whatever, 7,000, and the larger listenership could earn slightly bigger. But it was a community diary that stood the test of time, very tricky to organise, and it was a live read in the radio stations with a sting in and out for Telecom Air. The Telecom Air Community Diary. I always remember it. And it was a big breakthrough, the biggest sponsorship that the radio stations had at that stage. But it is important to remember these were outside of Dublin. Commercial stations like 98 and Capital Radio, as it was when it started, before it became Rock and before it became FM 104, had their own ideas, and they were very much head-to-head and didn't want to get involved in such a kind of a rate card. They needed to do their own thing. And understandably, they had their own people on the ground in Dublin, just as much expertise. Cork was the same. What was, I'm struggling, but I think it was Radio South, which became 96 FM and 103. County Sound came along then, and this was all in the 90s, so I'm not completely up to speed, whatever he's called now. And then, of course, we had the north side of Cork as well, represented by another station, and they all became the same group. So gradually, proper regional radio was established with proper figures, with, they were all proper figures, if you like, but figures that stood the test of time and had proper research and real data behind them. And there was a budget, that was the thing. Otherwise, it wasn't really doable. So I think that's my memories of the 90s to date. And terrifically pleased with the Radio Advertising Awards when they got off the ground in 93. First time radio had been treated separately. And those then morphed into the PPIs, which have now changed again. But just to get radio on the map properly as a medium was hugely important. And I'm really proud to this day of being involved with that. And also hugely grateful to, you know, the living it gave me at that time, until I'm now doing talk back and coach talk, as I say, which is my new ventures, and I'm beginning to start a podcast on coach talk particularly. But it all came from Pirate Radio Station and a bicycle shed in Southside Radio and the Hotel Victor on Rochestown Avenue, Dublin.